The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
My good afternoon. Tuesday afternoon, the 14th of April, 2026. Live from Douglas in the Isle of Man. Man in Line's on open line today till 1. Call 66 13 68. Text or WhatsApp 166 177. Email studio at manxradio.com. Well, of course, as was mentioned yesterday by caller Andrew, we understand that the bus drivers on the Isle of Man will be holding a ballot tomorrow on the latest offer on pay and conditions. Unite the Union have told us they'll recommend members to accept it. Of course, there have been five rounds of strike action against Bus Vannin this year, and as soon as we know tomorrow, we'll let you know. In the You Can't Make It Up file, thank you, Steve, in Onchan. Last Thursday, I was dropping a family member to the sea terminal. She had two children with her, one in a pushchair. We found that the main area was closed off due to new flooring being laid, resulting in no access to the shops or toilets in the main check-in area. The check-in desks were closed and sealed off, no staff available to find out what was happening. She ended up having to queue adjacent to the gents' toilet door. This was the only access to the gents' toilets, as the public area was closed off. A shambles just before the busy Easter period. I looked yesterday and the check-in desks were all sealed off. I think it's, has that been remedied yet? I don't know whether that affected you. Thanks also to Les, who says, I was listening to Man in Line yesterday in somewhat of a sugar coma. I was finishing off the Easter eggs that I'd hidden away and then found them. Well, I hope you've come around today. This application for a temporary parking on the Summerland site has been rejected. Have you noticed this? The planning committee chair says plans breach roughly five departmental policies. Of course, the chair of the planning is Rob Callister, who is on tomorrow. An application for temporary parking on the former Summerland site rejected. The DOI, Department of Infrastructure, believed if approved, it would benefit commuters who could walk or cycle into work. Visitors using the horse trams and people using the local businesses. That's the car park would benefit them. Rob Callister told the hearing that he was surprised the application had been brought forward as it breached roughly five departmental policies. He said if an organisation wants to develop the site, then proposals need to be permanent and in line with the recommendations in the area plan for the East. The application that the DOI put in was for 32 spaces, a decrease from the previously approved scheme in 2019, which was for 58. This application also had a provision for two disabled parking spaces and would last for 18 months. There was also a provision for a daily inspection to ensure vehicles hadn't been abandoned. Committee member Matthew Warren said he felt it was insensitive, quite insensitive, and he would only support development if a proper plan was put forward. A number of reasons for refusal were listed by the planning department, including its potential to reduce the overall development size of the Summerland site and use as a temporary car park would have a detrimental effect on any future development on the Summerland site. It was also agreed the application was against the Council of Ministers' policy and failed to meet the land use and designation under the area plan for the East. And there was a message in from... this is Dennis, who said, I read about this Summerland thing on the Manx Radio website, on the news, your news portal on manxradio.com. And I'm just amazed by the fact that this is the Department of Infrastructure. These are the highly paid civil servants who took all the parking spaces from Douglas Promenade. They took the parking spaces away and now want to have a temporary car park on the building site that is Summerland. How on earth can they expect to be taken seriously? They probably knew that the planning committee were going to throw this out, so they were just throwing mud against a wall to see if something stuck. So really, Department of Infrastructure, you can't have it both ways. You can't take the parking spaces away on one side from the promenade and then want temporary parking spaces back. Newly elected MHKs look set to be the ones making the decision on whether to fund a new secondary school in Castletown. Treasury's confirmed it's very unlikely a Tim will vote on funding for the replacement of Castle Russian High School will take place in this administration, which of course wraps up in August. With a general election on the horizon, it means securing the cash for the educational establishment will be a hurdle for the next lot. As John Moss explains.
Well, what do we know about the progress of this mega project? Daphne Kane, the Education Minister, has said in the last few weeks there's no finished design yet. She was asked to publish plans and reports about the project in a question from a written reply from Onken MHK Julie Edge. She produced images released by construction firm Atkins Realis at the end of February, but she said those illustrations were concept drawings and the design is an ongoing process that isn't finished yet. So, where are we? In 2012, Bemahague School opened, replacing Park Road School, St Ninian's Lower. Its cost was £34 million. A figure was suggested a while ago for the projected Castle Russian School of £44 million, but time has passed since then. Last week, the Treasury Minister and his key officers appeared before the Public Accounts Committee, and the chair of the committee, Joan Watterson, one of the Southern MHKs who'd been pressuring for a new school, asked Treasury Minister Chris Thomas...
It seems easier administratively to kick it down the road for being too expensive... But when it does come back, it's just going to cost even more money.
So what's the figure in your head? How much is it going to cost?
Well, I'm not a quantity surveyor. I don't know what it costs to build a school. But what I would hope for as Treasury Ministers, you might have some idea in your mind as to how much there would be available for it.
Well, no, we can make money available if it goes after the end of the process, subject to the will of Timwell, because obviously that's the way that they'd find out the Treasury Act is written in terms of use of public funds. But say the Project Development Fund process is working through. You both the Southern members here and the Public Accounts Committee know of the way that the project is being developed. The public knows that because there have been press releases about the way this is being done. There's been a procurement process. I've been accused in the House of Keys and Tim Wood of various things to do with messing up the procurement process, which I haven't done. I'm supportive of the process in general, but it's just one of a great number of projects in the Project Development Fund process. It's just one of the huge demand on public funds from the education system.
So this has been promised for ages and ages. It's been in the pink book for a long, long time. Castle Russian High School is a very happy and productive school. You hear it when we take men in line to the Castle Russian students. They're very happy. The teachers work really hard and there's a good quality of education. But it leaks. And a lot of it is old. And it needs to be replaced. And we've been told it's going to be replaced. They've been told it's going to be replaced. The land is there. So whose responsibility is this? At some point, somebody has to hit the go button. What do you think about this? Apologies. Oh, Jason Morehouse dropped us a note, by the way. I wasn't aware that Max Radio had contacted me about the new Castle Russian High School. We did. In recent years, says Jason, I've spent a considerable amount of time raising concerns and trying to push this development forward. As a member of the Public Accounts Committee, I asked the Minister a number of questions at the hearing on Thursday afternoon about the plans for a new school. The block clearly appears to be within Treasury. The minister was clear that no meetings had taken place with the team dealing with the project since the meeting, which the Southern members also attended. This potentially is the first impact of the steam packet's decision to dramatically increase the cost of freight coming to the Isle of Man, something I questioned the Chief Minister about earlier this month with regard to the speed of price rises. Since the hearing on Thursday afternoon, says Jason Morehouse, I've been contacting the key players in an attempt to keep things going. Minister Thomas was clear that there's still the potential for a vote and that hope needs to be action. That's Jason Morehouse and his version of events. Any thoughts on this? The Castle Russian, at some point it will happen. But then again, the other schools around the Isle of Man want money spent on them. QE2 needs money spending on it. Ramsey grammar school is Second World War. Ballacamine is hemmed in, has no more land to operate on. St Ninian's ditto. So quite who's going to get priority? Is it the case of those that shout loudest get it first? Amanda dropped a note in. I've been trying to get a doctor's appointment every morning from 8 o'clock for what I believe is a worrying condition. I explained to the reception what my issue was and why I wanted to be seen quickly, yet was told to call back the following morning. No appointments were available. No sympathy either. I call back again. Same response. No appointments. It's no wonder the emergency department is overwhelmed. There are either too few GPs, too many patients, or patients seeing the GP when it's unnecessary. I never used the GP, but have contributed to NI all my life. Now I'm 50, I've no option but to go private at my own expense. I'm dissatisfied, especially as I explained why I wanted to be seen. It's a lump. And lumps can turn out to be, well, you get the picture. Amanda, I hope everything goes well, and this is not the first time we've heard of this. We've heard many times of people going to the emergency department because of not being able to get GP appointments. And again, quite what the answer is, whether it's to make the people who don't turn up, a DNA did not attend, to make them pay, so that everybody does use an appointment when they've got it. If there's no sanction for not turning up, then perhaps there's a type of person who will just not turn up. And that, of course, leaves everybody in the... Southern Andy on 580 says, once again, ferry timings have been changed later this week with numerous sailings affected. This is said to be due to the lack of water and the ongoing... Well, it's not the lack of water, it's the tides. Due to the ongoing dredging issues, or is it a lack of action? When's the government going to wake up and see the reality? We're an island. We need a harbour with sufficient water. We don't need vanity projects. We need a functioning harbour, a functioning airport, and a promenade that doesn't look like it was built 30 years ago. We need a full-trip horse tram. And more importantly, we need a government that can govern professionally and effectively. Roll on September, says Southern Andy. Here's a message in, and this is from Gordon. Hi, Gordon, who said, what's this story about the Douglas RNLI and the lack of a base? Something we've mentioned for quite a while, Gordon. Plans have been submitted for a new temporary base for Douglas RNLI, the charity looking for a site to relocate the existing boathouse. They started looking for a new site in 2013. Plans to renovate the new building were put forward in 2016 but weren't progressed. The charity's volunteers are currently operating from temporary premises at Battery Yard, but a planning application has been submitted to change the use of the Manx Marine Building on the Tongue. If approved, the new base next to the Coast Guard station will be leased by the Department of Infrastructure to the RNLI for 7 years, with a review option after four. The plans hope to improve welfare facilities for the volunteer crew, including changing rooms, a workshop, office space and a crew area. The slipway at the former station hasn't been used since 2018, and the lifeboat now launches from the liner berth within the harbour, an arrangement that will continue. The RNLI's lease on the former slipway station has expired and the site's been handed back to the government. Its future is going to be determined soon. The interim head of Region Wales West and the Isle of Man for RNLI said the volunteer crew deserve facilities that meet modern standards. So we'll see. Michael McDonald is the ports manager. He's the harbour master at the Department of Infrastructure, and said the RNLI plays a vital role in maritime safety, and we're pleased to support the temporary solution while discussions continue about the long-term future of lifeboat provision in Douglas. You wonder what William Hillary would have said about all this, don't you? It's not like we're nowhere. This is where the flipping thing started. And there we are. Oh, Robert's on now. Hi, Robert.
Hi, how you doing?
Well, terrific, thank you.
Yeah, good. You doing well? Yeah, hopefully. Look, the coal fund, you need to get a bill from the MUA, and if you've got coal fund vouchers... and send it in this month. So it's just about housekeeping for the people in council.
Okay, so you need to get a bill, did you say?
Well, you need to send in with a bill, any bill, to represent where your address is.
Right.
And then just send your vouchers in, the blue vouchers, and they come from the call fund directly.
Right, okay. Right, I'll just jot that. Anybody that affects will know. Thank you very much. Good to hear from you,
Robert.
All right,
no worries.
Okay. Pat said the government has said that the state pension fund will fail by 2048. Are you aware that there's abuse within certain industries not paying proper NI contributions? If a worker is employed as self-employed on £600 a week, they pay £5.80 in NI. If properly employed, over £90 a week is paid in NI. But the government won't act on this. So why should somebody paying £5.80 per week get the same full pension as somebody paying £90 per week? So is this true? If you pay self-employed £5.80, a £5.80 stamp, do you get, and of course, remember, when a self-employed person cashes up at the end of the year, there is also another NI bill that is due based on the amount that you earn. So it's not just that £5.80, an extra part is due. But thank you, Patrick. Texter 541 said, you were talking about dark skies. In Tenerife, they've got a dark sky designated 7,000 feet up. Cars and other vehicles are allowed to drive past right by the telescope. It works, and it's very popular. We're just mentioning the other day about the fact that if these proposed wind turbines go ahead and they're whatever they're going to be, 1,200 feet high, that will have significant visual impact. And Texter 541 saying those 7,000 feet up on Tenerife. But I mean, Tenerife, it's volcanic, isn't it, Tenerife? Black sand and all that. And I think Tenerife is, I think the highest point in Tenerife's got to be over 12,000 feet. So it's a lot higher than Snæfell. But that's a point of view. If you know anything about the Tenerife dark skies, it's just that we've not heard. And we trumpet our dark skies. The astronomical people trumpet our dark skies, and very proud of them they are. However, on the East Coast, if we're going to have 87 enormous wind turbines with red lights on the top that will, by definition, shine at night, and there are 87 disco lights flashing and winking off the East Coast, won't that affect astronomy on the island? Thank you, 541. There's a... talking of... Somebody asked yesterday about the... There's a petition about the Eastern Wind Farm. There's a paper version of the petition at Laxey Beach Cafe. Also, other ways to generate power rather than damaging wildlife, says Laxey. Of course, we're still in the planning stage of this with Orsted. 223 on the same subject. The proposed wind farm off Laxey will be built on the only natural herring spawning grounds around the Isle of Man that have been there for centuries. Surely the wind farm will erase this, says 223. And John said, I was listening yesterday when that gentleman said he was generating 2 kilowatts, just enough for 4 cups of tea. That's all. Well, yeah, 4 cups. What does a kettle take? 3 minutes? 4 minutes? So that's not 4 cups of tea, is it? That's 16 cups of tea an hour. Anyway, if you're generating electricity, all the best. Hello, Julian.
Hello, mate. Not very clear out there today, is it, for any kind of skies at the moment?
Well, we'll see. If anybody's generating solar power where we stand, of course, it doesn't need sun. It just sees light, doesn't it? So presumably they're all burbling away in the background.
Not a lot, I wouldn't have thought today. It's funny, actually. It's a fantastic view from the top of Mount Teide. I think it's 12,188 feet. So it's,
in Tenerife?
You're pretty high up there.
Yeah.
Yeah, Tenerife, the volcano. Yeah, it's pretty amazing. And they've got the Institute of Astrophysics for the Canary Islands, so they're all affiliated with the likes of Mauna Kea on Hawaii and stuff. So they've got this tie up, you know, so that when the sun, you know, when it gets light somewhere else, they've always got the ability to track stuff. So it's very interesting up there. I remember one year it was I think it was January, and they had like a foot of snow up there. And I was up near the observatory. They're kind of driving around, and there's like, it's like a complete whiteout. So they get some pretty amazing weather at the top there.
Anyway.
Yes, the ETA, the electronic travel approval authorization thing, that came on stream for the UK on February the 26th.
Yeah.
So unless somebody can correct me on this, TT riders coming from the UK, or if they're Irish from Dublin, will not need an ETA to the Isle of Man.
No,
they're not going to have to pay twice.
No, no.
I wouldn't have thought, would they?
The common travel area is basically the British Isles, including the Republic of Ireland.
Yeah, so the only people that will need an ETA to the Isle of Man will be somebody, say, flying into Dublin that's not from the common travel area.
That's it, yeah.
I would think, unless there's some European bikers or something that fly into Dublin. I would imagine that they might well need to get an ETA if that's the case.
Well, it's going to be everybody that's not from the common travel. I mean, and this is potentially thousands and thousands. And they're going to be, I don't know whether we're getting the word out of them, but this is £20, £20 per member of the party.
Yeah, but that's the UK one you're referring to for the bikers coming to the TT, though.
Yeah.
Because they'll already be in the... Yeah, that's right. So, I mean, I don't suppose there'll be that many people that will need a Manx ETA, will there, really?
Well, they'll have
the
had
grand
to,
scheme of things.
They'll have had to pay it to get into the UK, won't they?
That's right, yeah. So, I suppose they, most of the European or other bikers, they will have to know this, won't they? I would imagine. Otherwise... that's the crux of it. There's not much of a barrier on the Isle of Man, is there?
No, see, what
once
you're saying is that they will have had to have paid it before they get to the Isle of Man, so they won't blame us for it. They can just blame the UK.
That's right. Yeah, they'll be held up at the ports in Dieppe or in Holland or whatever. So in terms of the... I mean, I wonder how many people will actually need a Manx one. There won't be that many because it's unlikely that... I mean, what direct flights are there outside of the CTA to the Isle of Man? Apart from... I mean, I don't even know if somebody... Say you have those Tenerife ones, the Air Baltic ones that are talking about later on. Can a Spaniard book a return from the other end and come here and back? I don't know. Will they need to go through a Manx ETA in that situation?
I would imagine they would, because that's outside the common travel area. So if somebody is doing the reverse, the kind of one-way trip from Spain to the Isle of Man and back, that's outside the common travel area, so they will need an ETA.
Assuming that they're allowed to book on that end, if it's only a Manx only and they're prepared to fly the plane, if it's not full, if you see what I mean. If there were a few empty seats on the way up here, it makes you wonder.
Yeah, well, I mean, there are lots of people who do one-way trips anyway to Spain on those charter flights.
Yes, that's right. So there's a good chance that there might be empty seats on the way up. But, yeah, it's kind of interesting.
Interesting that this is... it smacks of being a revenue generator, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, that's it, isn't it? But I can't imagine... it's going to generate a lot. I would imagine the Dublin route will be the only way that's going to work, isn't it? I would have thought.
Yeah, you're quite right. I mean, anybody who's going to be coming to the Isle of Man normally comes from the common travel area. Not many people don't, and so we won't be getting many £20 from people.
Wouldn't have thought so. Okay. No, I don't think so. So, yeah. Anyway, thanks very much, Andy.
Good to talk to you. Thank you, Julian. Here's Howard with us now on Man in Line. Hi, Howard.
Hello, Andy. I just listened to you before there about the lifeboat, etc.
Yeah.
I think what the plan, and this is only an assumption on my behalf, reading the Manx News, they're going to move up, it'd probably be the office side of it and everything, up to the Tongue. I'm not sure which part of the building. There used to be a ship's chandler's there at one time. Whether it's still there, I don't know. But what they're operating from at the moment down in the harbour yard, it's pathetic. It's God help the fellas down there, because they're in quite literally containers, porter cabins. which is more or less opposite where the lifeboat house is. But again, one of the problems with this, the government, and not just this lot that we've got now, the ones previous, they were hemming and hawing and fighting and wrangling over where they were going to put the new lifeboat house, slipway and everything, to protect three or four little yachts that used to be in what we term as the croak. That's where these have been established for years, and we can't do this, that and the other, and the leases. They were the harbour board. The lifeboat was a very important piece of equipment, and I think you can take it out of your mind that they're going to be operating a lifeboat from up at the Tongue, because that's a marina.
Yeah.
And you can't possibly drop the gates just to let the lifeboat out. The lifeboat's got to be in a position where it can go virtually immediately. But it has been in, I think that's where they are now, is about either the third or the fourth place it was on the promenade, just at Clarence Terrace there, and then various other places before it finished where it is. And that's been there quite a long time.
Yeah.
And it doesn't last forever. Because I used to go down there when I was very, very young, fishing off the slipway. And so that was in the 1960s, going down there.
It's that building, Howard, this is a bit of an embarrassment, though, isn't it? The fact that William Hillary, I look out of the window here, and I can see the poor old lad looking out to sea. You know, he thought of the idea here, and we can't sort this out.
Well, no. And it's the harbour boards. They were saying, oh, we're getting new ships. We might want bigger area to work in for the ships and everything. But they were never taken into consideration. And the ability of modern ships to manoeuvre at a much easier way. You know, the bow thrusters, even stern thrusters.
Yeah.
When the old ships, what we used to call the Six Sisters and all them, they used to just come in, steam in, and straight up against the woodwork. No bow thrusters, nothing. But the modern ships, the manoeuvrability, and it proves it now, we've got one there, the Manxman. She's twice the size of the Ben McCree. Okay, it took a little bit of time to learn how to turn around, but you see her coming in virtually every day, and she swings around like, you know, like a two-penny boat.
Yeah.
So, as you rightly say, with the origins of the RNLI, I think the RNLI have been banging their head against a wall for this government and the previous government and the harbour boards, which what we now term as the DOI. So they should put that thing, that lifeboat slip there, because if they're going to work off the Larina berth, then they've got, they've got to go to the actual building on the Tongue and then come down to the Larina berth. So it's a double whammy. It's like having a fire station here and the fellas are for the fire engines being the other end of the promenade. So the two of them have got to be together.
Yeah.
And a new lifeboat house, a lifeboat slip, because the lifeboat that's supposed to be coming here is Shannon class. I believe that either what they term as a float boats or slipway boats. And I do believe they've got a number to make now, and then there'll be no more after that. They're going to go back to the earlier type of lifeboats that were much more, worked. You know, like the old Liverpool Trents and all them. Apparently they're not going to make any more Shannons. But that's an ideal place for it, because you're right at the harbour entrance, and the lads could belt down straight from the house, or when they were working, park outside the lifeboat slip and jump straight on board.
And that was the point. And again, in fact, Trevor's dropped a note in just to say, I'm sure there's a very good reason for this, says Trevor. It just doesn't smack of common sense.
Exactly. And that's what I'm saying. It's the Harbour Board Previous managers or the directors or whatever they call themselves and the government have been instrumental in holding the whole job up, because I know that building has been repaired time and time again, and it is in a sorry state. But it's part, it is a relevant part of our history again the government is ignoring. So, and you've got the Tower of Refuge, that's what, 200 year old, near enough, and where the shipping place is down the bottom there used to be the Fort Anne.
Yeah.
I think that's where Sir William Hillary used to live. And, well, Dame Nanner Eagle knocked that lot down. But that was all part of the history in 200 years. And what have they done to celebrate it? Just kept fighting between themselves.
Okay. All right, Howard, we appreciate it. Thanks for calling today.
Okay, take care.
It's 24 minutes before one. If you bought a EuroMillions ticket on the 31st of March and you haven't checked your ticket, you need to as soon as possible. A ticket bought on the Isle of Man has been unclaimed and the prize is £125,271 prize has been won on a EuroMillions ticket bought on the Isle of Man and nobody's claimed it. It was bought on the 31st of March. Get your ticket out. The five winning numbers: 5, 8, 10, 33, 38, as well as one of the lucky star numbers. Lucky star numbers were 2 and 7. So that ticket bought on the 31st of March on the Isle of Man has got a prize unclaimed to date of £125,271. Oh, I said, you just spat your tea out. Oh, is it you?
Ready to explore the Isle of Man? Discover ancient castles. Uncover hidden treasures. Climb the world's largest working water wheel and learn more at our remarkable museums across the Isle of Man. Go further, look closer, and discover the stories of your island home. Manx National Heritage Sites now open every day. Plan your visit and start exploring today at manxnationalheritage.im.
At Bagode Cattery, we've been caring for animals for over 50 years. As a cattery, we care for our customers' cats and treat them as our own. Visit bagode.com or call 321 989.
Simply Income Protection from Kestrel Insurance, a choice of benefits. Simple underwriting and peace of mind with a regular income for up to 2 years if you're unable to work due to illness or injury. Kestrel Insurance is registered with the Isle of Man Financial Services Authority.
On Sunday, the 26th of April, every person, every household will count in the Isle of Man census. The census works for all of us. It tells us about you, our communities, shows what services the island needs, helps to shape its future. From the 20th of April onwards, every household will be sent a letter explaining how to respond electronically, by phone or on paper. On Census Night, the 26th of April, count everyone in your household for midnight. Do it for everything you care about, for the island, for us.
The Manx Gaelic, Chinian Amera, the mother tongue of Alian Vanin, the Isle of Man. You can catch up with more of Manx Radio's Manx language programmes in the weekly podcast Aber Shen Rish. Say that again.
Aber Shen Rish.
Shen A, that's the one.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
It's 21 minutes now before. What is it? Juan with us now. Hi, Juan.
Hey, Andy. 125,000. That's nearly as much as your annual salary at Manx Radio, isn't it?
Lira, yes.
I took a bit of thinking there. I could hear the brains ticking over on the answer.
I'll wait.
just listening, I've not been able to get on quite a bit recently, so I've been busy on the politics page, but I'm sure Bonsai will be happy that I've not been on with Euphoria. But listening to the solar panel thing, David comes on every day with his solar panel update. But I was just in a place before Christmas, and they just built actually a brand new pier in the city, on the town, sorry, and built a whole carport garage there with 442 solar panels on that, and a walkway which creates shade for the people walking up or walking up the pier, which we probably wouldn't need in the LMM, but anyway, there's 404, which they say supports the running of the pier's facilities, produces 195,000 kilowatts per year. But it looks great. It looks absolutely great. It's a good design. It's angled, and it creates a carport and cars in the shade. But again, it's down to the costings, isn't it? And you know, the cost of the project to start with, and of course the life expectancy of the batteries. So I don't think really, although solar panels are going to be great, and I don't have nothing against them, but there's nothing really available to the general public at the moment that's as efficient as fossil fuels. You know, there's nothing there that's going to give us the continuity and baseload that we talked about for a couple of years on this programme. So I just kind of wanted to put that out there. It's like when you're travelling around different places, you pick up different things that different people are doing. I was in a place last week where they've just built a new seawall, and they've got a massive top to send the waves back to where it's like the traditional seawalls do, but it's big. It's a lot bigger than what we have. What they've done there, created a sitting area on the top of it because it's so wide that people can actually sit there, they can put their drinks and stuff there and look at the sea if they didn't want to go on the sand. So they've actually created something by putting the seawall there that's actually usable for the public as well.
Joan, you spend some time in the southern United States, in Florida, don't you? What's the take-up of electric vehicles in Florida like? Bearing in mind, in the United States, people travel a lot further routinely, don't they?
They do. From what I've seen there when I've been there, Andy, they're not fantastic at all. I mean, in fairness, the Americans are gas guzzlers. They always have been. I mean, the cars are extremely big. And in this day and age now, they've got really good, efficient, smaller cars, which they could really go on to, a lot more energy efficient cars. So they're very wasteful with the size of their vehicles. I've got to say that in all honesty. But as far as electric goes, no, I haven't seen. But I have seen, well, I've been over in South Africa, I've seen a few electric buses going around. Not many, but a few electric buses they're trying to push through. It'll be interesting to see how that matures. I just wanted to touch on a subject. I was on the politics page last night, and I asked Stu Peters. So this is in the public domain, so it's fine. I'm sure Stu won't mind me reading this out. He talked about faceless wonders in government, etc., and standby statements, etc. But I asked you, would you say in the last 5 years, inside rather than outside looking in, if you have been able to do or change what you thought you could do, and if so, what do you put that down to? There's been a lot of throwback at Stu because he was put in because he was the bad piece on Manx Radio at the time, and I think people thought he was going to do a lot. So it was interesting that Stu came back to me with, I thought politicians had more executive power, but in fact they're, for most part, just an inconvenience to civil servants who do have real executive power and long-term agendas like net zero. Ministers have more influence, but even they have limited ways to challenge what the department decides is best. And remember, they are not subject matter experts, so they have to rely on officer advice. I'm too old school to work within current organisations. I want to make decisions and stand or fall on them. But there is an army of people with clipboards making that impossible. There's a few more paragraphs there. Okay. Basically, at the end, I'm looking forward to my retirement.
Okay.
So that kind of gives us an overview of where we are with government at the moment. And again, with...
Okay. All right. Well, the line was faltering at some point and it's dropped off the end somewhere. Thank you. Good to hear from you. Thank you, Juan. Dick said, I'd like to email the two Garth commissioners who were talking about the wind turbines, but for some reason the website doesn't show their phone number or email address, just the generic admin at Garth. And one telephone number. Virtually all other authorities show emails and mobile numbers for every commissioner. Why doesn't Garth? Every MHK's number and email address is there too. Yes, if you go to the timwell.org.im site, there are emails and telephone numbers for every MHK. Even your one of your callers has his contact details on the Yonkers site, but there's nothing in Garth, says Dick. I wonder why. The MUA supposedly forecast revenue income and hedge the purchase of energy, so perhaps they could settle concerns about renewable energy. If they could give us a forecast cost of kilowatt, how much per kilowatt hour? So I assume the gas pipe is bomb-proof, says Tom. I don't think much is bomb. Depends how big the bomb is, I suppose, doesn't it? Somebody said, what's that website again for MHKs and MLCs? Really simple. It's been there for years and years and years. It's timwell.org.im. Timwell.org.im. And if you go to members and officers and then to members, you'll see colour photos of all the MLCs and all the MHKs. Click on them and all the details are theirs. Often home addresses, but also telephone numbers and email addresses, something that we had for years and years in the phone book. Considering the existing schools are in use and the money's being spent on them, why did they pay to demolish Park Road School, which is quite acceptable for teaching purposes? More than that, after paying to demolish it, they've done nothing with it, with the site only creating an eyesore, says B on 828. Well, they do car auctions from there and that's about it, don't they? And since the Bowling Green has closed down, the Bowling Green pub has closed down, that's an enormous footprint of brownfield site in the middle of Upper Douglas, isn't it? Texter 109 said, with regard to the Summerland site and DOI parking, why is the area at the end of Douglas Promenade, where the electric trams run, one of our busiest tourist attractions, not being generated in some way from a derelict site? It could be used either for housing or some form of tourism project linked to the trams or the horse trams, rather than being left for car parking or as it is now. What is this administration doing with regard to any of our daily issues? And Texter 802 said, regarding the lack of funding for the replacement QE2 school, let's drop the net zero fund, use it for the new school. Invest in children. And let's sort out the roads and infrastructure on the Isle of Man as well, says 802. Ditto, also a message in from Nathan, who said much the same thing. Surely any politician would have the backing of the population if they ditched the net zero fund and put it into infrastructure.
This is my last will and testament. To my family, I leave years of financial headaches, large legal bills, and the prospect of having to sell our home to pay for it all.
Is that the legacy you choose to leave? Without a proper will and thorough planning, it could happen. Mann Benham Advocates, experiencing wills, probate and estate planning with a friendly service to make sure the future of your loved ones are secure. Don't put it off. Call 639350 for your free initial consultation with Mann Benham. Here for you.
Let's get some boots on the ground for this year's most memorable charity challenge. The 50K Challenge Walk on Sunday the 19th of April in support of Hospice Isle of Man and the island's firefighters. This special non-competitive event brings together community, endurance and breathtaking scenery from Peel to Ramsey for two really great causes. To find out more and to enter, visit hospice.org.im/charitywalk. Kindly supported by Canaccord Wealth.
Don't miss the Kane & Wicker furniture range in store at Millichaps of Ramsey. Includes sofas, chairs and swivel rocker chairs, dining sets and coffee tables, with designs featuring quality frames, beautiful fabrics including Laura Ashley designs and comfortable fully sprung seats with leather bindings. Plus, Plus, we have special offer suites and a huge range of window blinds to complement. Discover exclusive Kane and Wicker furniture in store now at Millichaps of Ramsey.
We make oil heating easy with our range of services. Whether it's our free smart tank monitoring systems or just our efficient all-island deliveries, Ellen Vanin Fuels has it covered. Call us on 844-000 to find out more.
Get the full story. Tune in to Manx Radio's newscast for in-depth interviews behind the headlines. Find the newscast now at manxradio.com or your usual podcast provider.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
A note in from Foster in Tendergree in Northern Ireland, who just said, I just say good luck to bringing more tourism to the Isle of Man. The new steam packet service from Larne starting... Well, it started, didn't it? £26 foot passenger one way, not bad. But for whatever reason, the steam packet put the fare up to £60 for Easter week and over £300 to bring a vehicle from Northern Ireland. It will be cheaper for me to fly to the Canary Islands. Cheaper food, cheaper drink, cheaper selection of accommodation. I'd still love to visit the Isle of Man and support the tourist industry. Your hoteliers are facing an uphill struggle, just a thought. And in the rare event, says Foster, that people fly into Dublin, then the Isle of Man, they'd have to get stamped into the common travel area in Dublin. I don't believe there will be a secondary check at Douglas Port or at Ronald's Way Airport. As you stated, the common travel area includes the Irish Republic, Channel Islands and the Isle of Man. I would have thought that most non-UK residents will arrive in the Isle of Man from UK Great British airports like Liverpool, Manchester and Dublin might take in cross-Atlantic arrivals from the USA and Canada. So it looks like we're not getting any money from that. Thank you, Foster. Good to hear from you. Howard's right about the situation, says Tony, regarding the lifeboat. It's embarrassing that the RNLI started here and we don't have a lifeboat house in Douglas. Typical government again. Roll on September, says 538 Tony. 167 says the increase in fuel prices, the VAT on a litre has increased by about 10p. Nice little windfall. Nice little windfall if you're putting 60 litres in. £6. Today is the first time, says Gaz, I've seen a uniformed security guard in Tesco. Are we seeing a wave of thefts like the UK is experiencing? We don't hear much about that. And somebody mentioned a few weeks ago, didn't they, that the meat, the steaks in the co-op in Ramsey are now in plastic boxes. I don't know whether that's because of a spate of shop. We certainly don't get the sort of shoplifting that they get in the UK. That's horrendous stuff that they get when swarms of people just go in and steam on through. I wonder why we can't buy a small windmill about 3-4 metres high and fix it in a garden to generate some electricity and help with the bills. I think it would work, says Frank. So if you're allowed solar panels, why aren't you allowed a windmill in your garden? Nice try, Frank. All this talk about how wonderful solar panels are, says David on 33033, nobody mentions roof fires caused by faulty batteries. It's one of the most common causes of fires in the UK. Is that true? Never heard of that before. Texter 109 says, derelict sites that currently affect Douglas as a tourist attraction include, and again, you see, we may miss these because familiarity breeds contempt, doesn't it? They just slide into the background. North Quay, Douglas. South Quay, Douglas. Lord Street. The Strand Street steel frame, the iron skeleton. The Castle Mona Hotel, the Horsetram Building and Summerland. These are all major development sites that appear to have been ignored as a tourist. Would you visit? Would you return? Or would you recommend the Isle of Man when the place just looks shabby, says 109. Isn't the point, Texter 927, isn't the point about not having a timetable but relying on tidal conditions something that should have been considered regarding harbour and Heysham depths before we ordered the new ferry? And Pat on 223 says, in answer to the question about self-employed paying only £5.90 national insurance per week, they also have to pay Class 4 at the end of the year, but this only equals an amount of one-third of what a fully employed person would pay. Also, the self-employed not only receive a full pension, but the same healthcare as those who've paid full NI. On government-funded contracts, all staff should be fully employed, but there appear to be no checks. From every 2,000 people on self-employment, the loss in NI is over £7 million per year, at a minimum, says Pat on 223. Okay, let's get to the lines. Elizabeth's with us now. Hi, Elizabeth.
Good afternoon to you. So you're talking about the steam packet, and you can say it's £26 each way to Lawn. Well, I booked a fare to Liverpool on the 28th of February. I'm leaving on the 24th of April, returning on the 2nd of May, and I paid £67.50 for that fare.
Foot passenger?
Yes, just a foot passenger.
Hmm.
So I'm going Friday the 24th and coming back on the 2nd of May, Saturday the 2nd of May. But I booked it on the 28th of February, and that's the price they charged me for it.
Do you consider that value for money?
Not really, no. Not really, no. It's very expensive, so it is, for considering the fact it's only 80 miles from here to there, you know. But also, I received my rates bill today, and the rates have gone up considerably, Douglas rates, and they cut down our bin collection in Douglas to every fortnight instead of once a week.
Yeah.
So you would have thought they would have reduced our rates instead of putting them up.
Ah, but they've set an OR. I've had mine as well, but there's a nice colour booklet that with it to tell you all about it, isn't there?
That's going to cost me how much? Another £60-£70, something like that, for a book we don't read. A lot of the services that are available in Douglas, I don't really use them. I don't visit the library, you know, and I don't really visit the park apart from to walk through it. There's lots of things I don't use, but I'm still paying for them. And I'm a single occupant here on my own, so and I use very little water. I'm very conservative regarding water, and I recycle everything possible. And yet, no, I should be. You should be on a lower tariff when you live on your own, you know?
Okay. Elizabeth, it's good to hear from you. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you. Tell you bye.
I wish something could be built on the Summerland site, says 068. We can't go on leaving it like a bomb site. If it doesn't have a building, they make it a car park for patrons of the MER, as there's nowhere for them to park using the tram for the day. And why is that? The DOI took the car parking spaces away. It's getting more difficult to find a parking spot lately. We went to Peel yesterday, found lots of electric charging points where you could park. Many of them were empty. This encourages people to park on yellow lines or inconsiderately. Peel must be losing customers. Probably the same across the island. Thank you, Harry, on 490. Back tomorrow with Rob Callister, Planning Committee Chairman. Thanks to Chris on the phones.
WINT.